Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 7th day of December, Anno Domini 2019, a day that will live in infamy. And you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And it's 6 minutes after the hour. We're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes. Don't get the blues. Here comes the news. Oh, and by the way,
that's right. Today is Pearl Harbor Day.
Today is Pearl Harbor Day. And you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. And here's something that you make
a soft filter on.
It's completely covered up. Here's something that would make that's better. That's I like that. Here's something that those of you who are on the YouTube stream, has it started already?
Yeah.
Those of you on the YouTube stream are seeing weirdness happening with Steve and one of the cameras.
Both of them now.
Now both cameras. those of you in the Rochester area will be very excited about this. Those of you outside the Rochester area, not so much. But on Tuesday, Greenlight Networks and LaChase Construction announced a joint venture under which LaChase will assume construction management for the expansion of Greenlight's fiber optic network. This joint venture, called Greenlight LaChase, should significantly accelerate the build-out of Greenlight's fiber optic network in Rochester and across upstate New York. Greenlight LaChase will select the areas for network expansion, design the network, and manage the pre-construction requirements. LaChase will then handle contracting and management of the subcontractors. This model should, we all fervently hope, bring significant speed and scale to the expansion of Greenlight's network and high-speed internet service offerings. As we all know, there has been increasingly vocal demand, including in this room, for higher speed internet access at a reasonable cost. Greenlight has been providing that here, but some people have been unhappy with the speed of the build-out.
Who would be that?
Yeah. This joint venture between Greenlight and LaChase will hopefully give that build-out the boost it needs to get us all hooked up soon. So, our poll of the week at soundbites.org is Greenlight and LaChase form a joint venture, and your choices are, I want it now. I'd like fiber internet, yes. I'm happy with my current provider. Dial-up is good enough, also known as get off my lawn. Sadly, I'm not in the area. Enter what now? And other. And yes, I did not have a choice, I realized, for I've already got it. So you can pick other and gloat in the...
I said, I already got... they're already strung it in my neighborhood. Now it's just a matter of going from house to house to house to hook it up from the pole to the house.
Right. But you can now gloat in the comments. And for those of you who want to say anything in the comments, at soundbites.org, bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, scroll down on the right and under the fascinating stuff. You'll see the forums. The second forum down is the poll discussion. Currently, at least, the number one item under poll discussion is 7 December 19. Greenlight and LaChase form a joint venture. And if you'd like to talk about that or dang near any computer-related thing, give us a call. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 1-800-790-0415.
Well, they've sort of been doing subcontracting now, but now having LaChase behind it, that's a little bit bigger oomph.
Yeah.
You know, a bigger corporation with better ties out there to other companies that they can now pull in and get a bigger resource of expertise. Because it's not just doing fiber is a little trickier than the old, you know, phone lines and that type of stuff, you know, where you just got a couple wires and that the fiber is far more intricate.
Yeah, we were talking about that earlier, and I was saying that back in the day, anybody with a pickup truck and a pair of pliers could run cable to, you know, whoever.
Yeah.
But now it's, you know, that's just, now it's fiber, and that's hard.
Well,
and requires a certain amount of expertise.
Well, when they were in my neighborhood, I mean, they were literally bringing down the cables, and they had these little trailers up and down the street, and they were putting the cables through the trailer where it's nice and warm in there, and they're in there doing their work, and they were in there most of the, you know, of a few
days.
They're
not stupid. They're not stupid.
Yeah, no. And to put it back up, excuse me. Plus, the church there is also in the midst of putting up, I think, some new microwave dishes on the side of their towers because had companies there. That's one thing I've noticed. You know, since I drive for a living now, and driving around, you see more and more of the cell towers. You know, I mean, in the stations all around, even more so.
Well, you're going to see even more of them for 5G.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It's already, you know, bad enough now.
Well, 5G is faster, but has a much shorter throw. So you've got to have more and more and more and more and more and more and more towers.
Well, they just put up a new highway department over there between 590 and 104 for the Orendiquite. And sure enough, as soon as those buildings went up, bam, up went two big cell towers in that area. And they're pretty big, you know. Again, all this clustered, you know, cell tower and the dish type of stuff on them. Yeah.
One thing I do have to say that I could be just a little bit jealous of at some point, although I wouldn't really take advantage of it. But one of the things that Spectrum is now doing is their modems, their wireless modems, actually have two separate sections in them, and the homeowner is only using one.
Right.
So what they're talking about doing is using the other one and making it public Wi-Fi. It wouldn't be on your network, and it wouldn't count against any data cap you might have. But it would be everybody in a neighborhood
could
would
share.
Essentially be providing internet access for anybody else walking by. Now, I'm not sure how useful that is. Quite honestly, unless you're surrounding a small park, because, you know, if I'm sitting out on a beach somewhere, there aren't any houses nearby.
Yeah.
But it's still a very nice idea to be able to provide public Wi-Fi, and I'm sure it'll be slower speed, and I'm sure it'll be commercials and everything when you try to log in to get in. But it's still a very nice idea, and I'm very impressed that they're gonna do that. I like the idea.
We've heard around the country that other cable companies are doing the same thing.
Yeah.
And the big annoyance is it steals some of your bandwidth whenever someone else comes by.
Well, yes. Yes, that's true. And it does mean there'll be more we used to call them parkers. I don't know what they call them now. But I see you're using this one for that and that one for this, and wrong with that camera?
One of my cameras apparently died.
Oh, okay.
It looks like it's got a soft filter on it, or way out of focus.
It's not just unfocused?
I tried that.
Okay.
I'll play with it some more.
No, you can turn this one around that way.
No, you're in, son. You're in. That's the way it works. And Steve and I are now he can't really see much of what he's doing there. He's going to be leaning over like this to
do
stuff.
Here.
Oh, you can do it on there. That's right. You got your thing. But yeah, so and I like that idea, and I'd love to see more public Wi-Fi out there for people. I think Wi-Fi is much less a luxury and much more a necessity for many people.
But I've seen some places. You go into and it says No, we do not have Wi-Fi. Try this thing called talking to each other.
Oh, yeah, 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 yeah. But right. And so, you know, when I'm taking my Chromebook around and writing, sitting and writing somewhere, mm-hmm. I want to have Wi-Fi. But when I'm out with other people, I want to talk to them.
But too many folks nowadays, sadly enough, don't.
I like looking up stuff that they're talking about.
Yes. Yes, I see people doing that a lot, too. But, yeah, the idea is that if you're out with people, be with the people. Otherwise, stay home. You don't even have to put pants on.
Well, like I said, you know.
I should put pants on when I go out?
I'm sorry. Most people do, yes.
There's no changing him.
No, well, since he's not wearing pants, you don't have to.
I could be wearing a kilt.
You could be, but then you have to find out, are you going regimental?
Yeah. No, we don't want to know.
Right? I don't. But
I said you have to find out. I don't want to know.
I was going
to
say, no.
Yeah, I usually don't, but I've got a couple of Scottish friends that do wear their kilts.
Sure.
They have their formal kilt and then their casual around the house kilt.
Sure. I know people who have, and they're not called work kilts. They have a different name, but they wear them to work. And it's people wear kilts. If you got good legs, you know, go for it, I say. I've got good legs. There you are. Getting a kilt. Yeah. I'll be getting a kilt.
Utility kilt.
That's it. Utility kilt.
See,
that's
I had
the
to
word.
Look it up. I needed the internet.
You needed the internet for that. But yeah, we're finding many, many more places that that have internet access. But public Wi-Fi is something you need to be careful of, because public Wi-Fi can be hijacked, right? When you go into a place and they have, you generally see multiple Wi-Fi choices, and ask if it's a restaurant or whatever, ask the server which one is theirs.
10-1 odds, they're not going to know.
Well, but they'll find out, because if, you know, I could easily go into a place, set up a Wi-Fi hotspot,
mm-hmm.
and capture all the traffic going through that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Be especially wary of the free public Wi-Fi.
Right. because if you're not particularly careful, you will find that you've managed to get yourself trapped by someone. And the reality is, if you've got, how do I want to put this? If you've got a connection to somewhere that is secure, HTTPS, or you see the little lock in your browser, then you're still secure up to a point. But the Wi-Fi connection you're going through still knows you've gone to that site. Whether that information is useful to them or not is a separate issue. But, you know, often what they do is, if you go to a bank or some such, then they save that session. The bad guys, I'm not saying everybody, clearly not everybody, but bad guys, would save that session and then later on try to break in. So be careful who you connect to and why you're connecting to them, and see what that all means as far as how you're connecting. So this whole idea of public Wi-Fi, again, if you're just looking stuff up on Google or, you know, whatever, you're going to Soundbites to look up something, or you're streaming our show or whatever, you know, things like that, then fine. It doesn't matter where you are. It's not a big deal. But if you're doing something private, you may not want to do it on public Wi-Fi. And VPNs are the same way, by the way. Right now, at least, when you request a site, that request is in plain text. Anyone can read it. So no matter where you are, even if you're going through, well, VPN, maybe not, depending on the VPN you've got. They know you've connected to that VPN.
Right.
But that's probably about all. But the problem is the VPN still can read all that stuff. Because don't forget, with a VPN, you are only encrypted from you to the VPN. The whole idea behind a VPN is that they then decrypt it and send it on to the other place. Then they get the response and encrypt it and send it to you.
Back to you.
So the question is, how much do you trust that VPN to not be stealing your information? That's important.
And now, there lies the challenge to find out.
Right. Now, I said earlier that currently, at least, everybody knows where you're going. And the reason for that is there's something called DNS, Domain Name Services. When you go to google.com, the internet doesn't know google.com. They know 8.8.1.1 or whatever the number is. And so you request, you do a domain name request. It says, I want to go to google.com. And then the domain name server says, oh, yeah, google.com is at 8.8.1.1.
Whatever,
and then you can
yeah.
go there. So right now, those requests are always plain text. Always. So everybody at least knows where you're going, not necessarily what you're doing once you get there.
Mm-hmm.
There is a movement, I guess is the word for it, to encrypt DNS queries. So the DNS queries would also go over HTTPS.
And they're calling it
DOH. They're calling it what?
DOH. D-O-H.
Right. Right. DOH. It's a...
Because
Simpson, so Homer Simpson.
Yeah, there's already two acronyms in there. So this is an acronym of two acronyms.
Right. Recursive acronyms. A lot of companies are really angry about this.
Yeah, there was a big article a couple of weeks ago. Comcast, one of the large internet providers, wrote a letter to Congress saying that Google is doing a bad thing. Mozilla's doing it too, but... And so they kind of send a letter along. We've already done it. What don't? Yeah. Because Google and Mozilla with Chrome and Firefox are implementing DNS over HTTPS, so that your DNS queries are now private.
Right.
Comcast, being an internet provider, sells all that information.
Right.
Of everywhere you go and how long you're there and what you're doing, and so they don't want any of this stuff to be private. So they sent a letter to Congress saying, don't let this happen. It already did happen. And if you're using Chrome or Firefox, you can turn this on. One of the early issues is that Cloudflare is probably the first biggest DNS over HTTPS provider. And so instead of your traffic staying with your ISP, it goes to Cloudflare to get looked up.
Right.
But it's encrypted, so they don't know where you're going either.
Right,
that's the whole point of the DOH,
right?
And so Google fired back at Comcast. So as usual, the ISPs want to sell all the information about you, and the internet companies who create the information are trying to make you safer.
Right, I have to interrupt to point out that although I've had this Chromebook approximately 18 hours.
Mm-hmm. Infested with the cat hairs?
Still got cat hairs everywhere. I have yet another new Chromebook. Those of you who have been following my saga, I still have the other Chromebook, which I love. But I was at Woot. If you don't know about Woot, I'm sorry.
Yes, that
I'm
has
so
been,
sorry to have told you that.
It's been around for how many years?
Yeah, but it sucks my money away.
But, yeah, but in a good way.
Yes, in a very good way. And of course, now that they're part of Amazon, as is so many things are these days, I get free shipping. So it's even cheaper. There was this Chromebook, which was about a $350 Chromebook for $130. And I thought, okay, I really pretty much can't say no to that.
Yeah, for that price and, oh, something, you know, as nice as it is. I mean, that's a nice little Chromebook.
Yeah, it's got.
That's a 14-inch screen, right?
14-inch screen.
Mm-hmm.
HP 4 gig dual core AMD processor. Very nice. It's got Bang & Olufsen speakers in it. So I'm very pleased with it. It's all. As I said earlier, setting it up was an ordeal. I had to type in my username, my password, and the password for my Wi-Fi.
Bet you took you all, what, 10 minutes?
Yeah. And then I just waited.
That's even with taking a break.
Yeah. I just waited for everything to install. Because it's I've got some Linux stuff installed. It took a few minutes for that to
install. How'd you live through that?
Yeah, exactly. So I just sat and played with the cat, which explains where the hair all came from.
But now, wait a minute. Here's the question.
Yeah.
You have that now.
Yeah.
And you have your other Chromebook.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which one is now going to be acquired by either wife or daughter?
Whichever one they want. I'm not stupid.
No, I'm just wondering when you come in with neither.
Yeah, well, then I got to have to buy a third one. That's exactly right.
Well, that's what I'm saying. You got, well, you know, they're new and both could. You must, you should have gotten the third one.
I should have. Well, that's a fight over, because the other one is 8 gig and a quad core processor, and the screen flips around to make a.
No, there won't be any fight on that one. Your wife will definitely get that
one. Oh, no, she'll have to fight Amelia for that one. I may be left with this one or none, and that's fine too. Believe me when I tell you it's all fine.
I was going to say, you might come back in with the old one. Come back in. Nick, what happened to the other two? Yeah.
Yeah. This one can't be updated anymore, which is why I bought the new ones. Now I'm still using this because nobody else wants it because they can't be updated anymore. So I get it. It's fine with me. It's fine with me. But yeah, so I could not conceivably say no to this.
No. For not at that price?
No.
And a Chromebook, like we've been telling folks, you know, the Chromebooks are so great in that you don't have to worry about the spyware, the malware, the viruses, and you don't have to worry about the bad updates every other week from Microsoft.
Right.
Because there is no OS that, you know, is going to damage this or let this in or that in. Chrome just doesn't do it. Think of it as an old dumb terminal, folks. Back in the day when you would just go over, turn it on, and it connected to the mainframe. That's basically what the Chromebook is doing. You're turning it on, and it's connecting to the internet. It has to have internet service so that you can store your files and everything else and get to everything.
Yep.
But there's nothing that you
can't. Dumb terminals.
Yeah. You can't. There's nothing you can't do on a Chromebook that you can do on a regular computer. Right. Whether it's listen to music, edit photos, and now with the newer Chromebooks, being able to do all those apps that you're doing on that little phone of yours, you can do them on even this 14-inch Chromebook.
Yep.
They're all there. They're
and accessible. It runs Linux.
It's a win-win all the way around.
This was inexpensive because it was, and I quote, refurbished. But I'm promising you, I don't see any death
nothing
scratches,
to,
nothing.
Right.
So, yeah, it's pretty cool.
One thing I want to jump into just before we go to the break, there is a big announcement right now, folks, that the German program that you've come to listen to, you know, all, you know, up until what, a couple months ago, is returning. December 21st, we're proud to announce that the German program will be coming back here to Jazz 90.1.
Back in just a couple of minutes, Soundbites, member-supported Jazz 90.1, 29 minutes after the hour.
Computer talk you can understand. More Soundbites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 35 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites Chair Dancing. Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0455.
Once in a while, Rob gets it right.
Yeah, exactly. Rarely, but it's nice.
We'll get them once in a while. It's the holidays.
It's
a
holiday. Give them another one. On Wednesday, Apple was caught red-handed, and now the company has admitted that the settings in millions of iPhones are misleading users about their use of location data and promises to fix it. The admission follows research published by security specialist Brian Krebs, which reveals Apple's new iPhone 11s are seeking information about their location even when users have specifically changed the phone's privacy settings to stop this from happening. something that violates the company's own privacy policy. In response, Apple initially dismissed the finding as expected behavior. But on Wednesday, the company has changed its tune, warning users that the range's new, iPhone 11 range, they're calling it a range because there's multiple iPhone 11s, that the range's new ultra-wideband chip is behind the background checks. According to Apple, ultra-wideband technology is an industry standard technology and is subject to international regulatory requirements that require it to be turned off in certain locations, said Apple in its statement. iOS uses location services to help determine if an iPhone is in these prohibited locations in order to disable ultra-wideband and comply with regulations. Apple states that the management of ultra-wideband compliance and its use of location data is done entirely on the device, and Apple is not collecting user location data, which is something that initial research actually backs up. What will raise eyebrows, however, is Apple's next course of action. Having claimed that it had followed international regulatory requirements, the company now says it will enable these background location checks to be disabled in an upcoming iOS update, which means they didn't need to be done in the first place. Needless to say, this will raise suspicions among those who are protective of their privacy, especially as it comes just months after Apple admitted it hired contractors to secretly listen to Siri audio snippets recorded by owners' iPhones, and those snippets included some very private things. When the company's own privacy page states, "At Apple, we believe privacy is a fundamental human right," it sets itself a high bar, and it is one the company has fallen below again.
Due to probably money.
Yep. Do you care if your iPhone tracks you? Give us a call. 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415.
Because just even if they're saying that they're using it for marketing, finding out, you know, where folks want, you know, are interested in it, it's just no different than, like, right now, if you go on Facebook and you happen to click on something, just to, you know, you're just randomly looking at it. Now you're inundated day after day of, you know, more ads like that. Say it's just looking at a car. Bam, all of a sudden you're getting deals and everything else, car insurance and all this other stuff all over just because you happened to quick look or stop and look at that one.
For the next 6 months, my Amazon feed is going to be full of all the crap I bought for my wife.
Well,
that I won't buy again till next Christmas.
Right. Yeah.
Well, in my particular case, there was a day when I suddenly got these. I said to my wife, I'm getting these pop-up ads for bras. What do they think of me? She said, oh, I looked something up on your laptop. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what Facebook thinks of me now, but clearly.
Well, you're going back to those days of wearing a dress and the games again?
She could have said, who are you buying bras for?
Right. Yeah. Oh, you could have been in such deep doo-doo.
Yeah.
And not even. No, I didn't, honey.
Right.
And she could have held that over you like.
What's worse is Amazon. Amazon is sending me emails that say, we found an item you might be interested in, and it is the item I just bought.
Same here.
I just bought that. I'm no longer interested. I am interested in it. You're right about that, but I'm not going to buy another one.
Well, if it's a lower price, I'm mad because I would have bought it at the lower price.
For the longest time, and I finally had to tell them the stuff. You know, when I ordered the orb.
Yeah.
Oh, I kept getting, it's like, all right, already, I already ordered it. How many other times do you think I need it? I only need one for the house, not the whole freaking neighborhood.
You need another one for the back bedroom. Then you need another one in the garage. And then you need another one in the workshop.
And you need another one in your car just to carry it around. Yeah, it's getting out of hand. I don't, you know, I get what they're doing.
Yeah.
When they send me ads for something I just bought from them, I don't need more ads for that thing.
I can see it if it's on my wish list.
Right.
If it's on your wish list, but once you've ordered it, you know, it comes off of mine, I take it off. Don't keep inundating me that, you know, oh, maybe you want this piece of cable and all that. No, I don't.
Right. If I did, I'd have ordered it.
Yeah.
I'm not stupid.
Well, it's just like the
how many people look at that and say, holy crap, that is exactly what I was thinking I needed right now. Click.
Enough to make it worthwhile.
I suppose.
Well, the same with the Raspberry Pis. You know, I've ordered a couple of those. And I am getting inundated with all these other different kits and everything else. And it's like, geez, all right already. You know, I already ordered it. Don't keep reminding me. If I need it, I'll go back in there and get it. I found it once. I can go back in there again. There's this thing called, Google.
Yeah, right. And I can find what I need. I can even search inside
Amazon. So, yes. Yeah. And it'll give you 16 pages of the information that you'll want, more than you'll want to know anyhow.
And now, to contrast that, I bought some stuff from AliExpress, which is a Chinese company.
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't heard word one from them since then. I mean, I got my things. I got my stuff. But they're not inundating me with anything.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm very impressed by that, quite frankly.
That's good.
That's a dangerous website to go to.
Yeah, it really is. Yeah, it really is.
What's the name of it?
AliExpress. A-L-I Express.
Okay.
No, is that part of Alibaba?
No. Not Alibaba. Maybe Alibaba is the name of it. But AliExpress is lots and lots. And lots.
Yeah, this is part
and
of the,
lots of stuff.
The Alibaba group. The other one from China is Banggood.
Banggood. I've been there too. I haven't ordered anything from them yet.
It literally comes on the slow boat from China, most cases. But
well, that's the thing. If you like ordered it now, you're going to get it in February.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. Some stuff lately.
Yeah, some stuff has been.
Most of the time, it's coming out of the same factory as the name brands ones.
Some of the stuff. I mean, I ordered a small handheld radio, and that came from China, and I was surprised. I got it in less than a week.
Oh, nice!
And you know, normally coming from China, you know, it's the old adage: "Oh, slow boat from China." Yeah, no, they're starting to get up to date and starting to ship stuff. Air cargo.
Nice, nice. So, yeah, okay. We're going to go to the phones, and our first caller is Dennis from Rochester, New York. What's up, Dennis?
Hi, guys. This question is for Steve. I've got an iPhone 6S, and it's 13.2.3 is the OS on it. Ever since I downloaded that last update, the screen goes blank after within 10 to 15 seconds, and I didn't have that happen before, and I went through all the adjustments and shut off all this automatic stuff, and I'm still getting that to happen. If I set the phone down on a desk to look at it while it's setting down, it goes blank. If I'm holding it in my hand for more than a few seconds, I shouldn't say it goes blank, it goes dim. And then I have to tap it for it to come back up again. You got any thoughts on that?
Well, generally it goes dim to save battery before it actually locks itself, so make sure you've got your auto lock set to a longer value. There is a what do they call it? There's the proximity sensor that is set so that when you hold it up to your head, it's supposed to lighten, so it knows you're holding it. And when you set it down, it's supposed to darken because you've set it down, so you're not looking at it anymore. Have you tried? First thing is just do a full shutdown and restart. Next step would be to do an erase and reinstall. But I would make sure your auto lock settings are set, and the dark mode versus light mode. You might want to try setting it to light mode to see if that's what's doing it. Because depending on what apps you have running, some of the apps don't work well in dark mode.
Whatever the standard was before that dark mode and light mode came out, I'm on the standard where I guess that would be called the light mode, wouldn't it? What everybody uses.
Yeah, but you have to pick which one it is.
It may have gotten inadvertently set, is what he's saying.
The update might have inadvertently set it to this new setting, and you want to go back to the old one.
Okay, and also increase my auto lock time because you're saying it goes dim a little bit before it's ready to lock the phone?
Right.
Okay.
There's also something under battery, too. I'm checking my battery settings so that it will dim your screen to save battery life.
Yeah, that's fine, but, I mean, my battery, when this is happening, my battery is not low on charge. And if, so if I'm holding it in my hand at an angle, reading the screen, isn't the proximity sensor still supposed to know that I'm using it and not go dim then?
Yeah, it should.
Okay. Well, I will give it some the tries of what you said and see what happens. I was wondering if there might have been a problem that, because it started as soon as I got that last download. I didn't have that problem before that.
Yeah, there might be something in that update, and the next update will fix it.
Right, okay. Or it may be that it inadvertently changed something. Can you turn off the proximity sensor?
No, but there is an auto brightness command that will read the camera on how light the room is and will raise and lower the brightness depending on what it thinks you need. That's in settings under accessibility and display.
And so if you set it on the table, it's looking up at the lights and dims the screen. No, it should brighten the screen.
Yeah.
Run by me where that is, because I think I went into display and brightness, and I don't have that set for automatic, but the other one, this is a different one you're telling me about.
Yeah, under accessibility and then display.
Okay, I'll check that out, too. Maybe that's my problem.
There you go.
Yeah,
That's the one that
can affect your battery life. So if the brightness is up too high, the battery drains faster, so the auto brightness will dim the screen so that it doesn't drain your battery so fast.
Okay, cool.
All right. Thanks, Dennis. Yeah, it's the problem is there are so many choices now that you often get the same essential thing in two or three different places. Hello? And if you set it in two and miss the third, hello? You really didn't change anything.
Yep.
And I get that. I get that that's a problem. We all Android has the same issue. Laptops have the same issue. Tablets have the same issue. So it's a set of things that you have to be more diligent going through every choice, understanding it, and then making that choice. Thank you. All right. Back to the phones. Our next caller, if Dave will get there in time, is Steve from Greece, New York. Hiya, Steve. What's up?
Oh, good afternoon, gentlemen. I have a question that has bugged me since Windows 10 came out.
Why?
Because it does. Because I can't figure out how to fix it. Occasionally, I like to go into safe mode, and I like to go in with networking. And I know before I sign in, I am supposed to be able to, in the lower right corner, sign into my network.
Right.
But I never have that option. There's never anything in that lower right corner that will allow me to sign into the network. So I can't go with networking.
And once you're in, of course, you can sign in.
No, I can't. Why, you have to do it before you...
I see what you're saying. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, it's safe mode is all way different in Windows 10. It's you have to be in full Windows and then reboot in safe mode.
Yeah, it's not like the old days you can just go ahead and hit
F8. To bring up that menu like we used to, which is the worst thing they could have done.
Now shift F8.
Yeah,
I think now.
It's just shift. So if you're on the sign-on screen, you hold down the shift and restart, and then you can go into troubleshooting, then you can go into advanced options, then you can go into startup options, and then you can choose whether you want networking or not. So it's a lot worse than it used to be.
Yeah, if they had just left it alone, hit F8, that was the standard for so long. It was so easy that you could sit there and then from that menu say safe mode with networking, command prompt, or whatever you wanted to do. Why they took that away?
Okay, I think I misunderstood. I've already selected sign in with networking.
Right. Right. Go ahead.
Okay, but when you do that, you're supposed to. I need to, in the lower right corner. When you do that, it brings up the sign-in screen. or you put in your password or whatever you want to do. And in the lower right corner is the only way you, there's the, there used to be, the icon where you could select your network. So, you know, work with networking. And that is not there. There is never an option for me to actually choose the network to sign into.
Right. The theory is it's supposed to pick that up from the original settings in Windows 10. So if you are logged into the network in Windows 10, it will then automatically log you in when you choose safe mode with networking.
Well, that doesn't work.
Well, are you on Wi-Fi or cabled in?
I'm on Wi-Fi now. I do have a computer that's cabled in. I haven't tried that one.
I would try that one. I'm not finding anything about that, but I'm remembering that safe mode turns off your Wi-Fi.
So it may need to
and
have
it may
ether.
Need to be wired to go into to be in the network.
That eliminates a lot of computers being able to.
I don't disagree with that.
Why they did away with the menu is even beyond wondering.
Right. But yeah, there doesn't. I don't believe that lower right thing, left thing, is there anymore. No, I don't believe it is. Interesting.
I haven't tried to get in a while. I haven't needed to, but I can see myself. When I run my virus checks and things like that, I have to do it in safe mode.
Yeah.
And the way it is now, I have to update everything before I
right.
the safe mode. To,
yeah.
If I forgot something, tough.
But if you go through the troubleshooting options, there is a safe mode with networking option.
Right.
Yes, number four.
Yeah, but it may turn off, this part of safe mode may turn off your Wi-Fi.
Yeah, and I think that's... Try it with a cable and just and see if it works that way. It may be that they've disabled. I just seem to remember that, although I'm not finding anything on it quickly on the net. But I seem to remember that safe mode with networking disables Wi-Fi, but doesn't disable Direct Connect.
Of course, you can't override that because you need it.
Right. Well, it may be that you can then turn on Wi-Fi once it's in safe mode, right? Go down to the corner there and turn on Wi-Fi.
Maybe safe mode has the Ethernet driver built in, but the Wi-Fi driver needs more hardware access. It needs more radio access. Maybe that's why it doesn't work in Wi-Fi.
It worked in all versions until I got to 10.
I believe you, and I have had it myself, yes. Yeah, theoretically it's supposed to work, but that's
Windows.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, here it is. While in safe mode with networking, open the device manager, the network adapter, and enable the driver.
So go to device manager.
Yeah. Open the device manager, expand the network adapter so you get to the right one, and enable that driver.
All right.
There it is. So, yeah, they turn it off, but you can turn it back on again. Just more convenience for Microsoft.
Yes. They had a way that worked. They had to actually change it. They went out of their way to make it harder.
Yes. Congratulations. You understand how Microsoft works.
Yeah. Well, I've known that for years, but I still like programs I can run on Microsoft, but I can't run on a Chromebook.
No, I get it.
But yes, I still have a Chromebook, too. When I need 10 hours of computing, I take the Chromebook.
Yeah, exactly. I don't even know how long this one will last. I guess we'll see, but yeah. They have batteries, you know, they say all day battery and on a Chromebook, they're generally not kidding.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, yeah, if you're going to watch movies and, you know, if you're going to watch a couple of movies in a row, you're going to wear down your battery. But for normal stuff doing all day, no.
Yep. Yeah. When I go anywhere where I any class or anything like that where I can't afford to be without the computer, I take the Chromebook.
Yep. Yeah, I don't even except for today when I just bought this and it wasn't charged up. I generally don't even bring my charger with me when I go out.
Yeah.
You know, if I can get 10 hours out of my Chromebook, how much charger am I going to need?
Well, because the computers have gotten so thin, they've moved more into the charger, so your charging brick is getting bigger.
Yeah, the charger brick is heavier than the laptop. That's exactly right. All right, thanks, Steve. Good luck with that.
Okay, thanks a lot, guys.
Yep, have fun.
Yeah, the new Apple 16-inch Mac has a 100-watt-hour battery.
Nice.
Which is the maximum the FAA allows on an airplane.
Yes.
And it has a 97-watt adapter.
Nice.
So it can charge that 100-watt-hour battery in a couple hours.
Well, and that's just it. You've got some pretty serious computing power, but you need some pretty serious battery to deal with it. I get it. I absolutely get it. It's a long and involved thing. Yeah, this Chromebook, I'm just looking at the specs for it. And 45-watt adapter, 2-cell, 47.36-watt-hour lithium-ion battery.
So I'll tell you for a little bit.
So a 45-watt adapter with a 45-watt-hour battery will take an hour to charge.
That's exactly right. Up to 10 hours and 30 minutes estimated battery time. And again, that's, you know, if you're going to watch movies, it's going to be less. But I've not with this one, but with the old HP, I've gone out and written from 10 in the morning till 6 in the evening and still had half my battery left.
You know? Yeah, because it doesn't take much. It
doesn't take much. So it's pretty cool. Depending on what you're doing, obviously, but for the sort of things that I tend to do generally, I don't need a charger, and I can save myself a lot of carrying around. All right, that music tells us you've wasted an hour of your life with this nonsense. But don't go away, because we're going to take a short break and come back and do it all again. So take your own bio break and come back in just a few minutes for a whole lot more of Dave Enright, way too much of Steve Ray, and me, Nick Francesco. You're anticipating that now, aren't you? It's 59 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest running computer show in the known universe. That's right. It's Soundbites right here on the Truly Great, and truly grateful to you that we can continue with your generosity to be member supported. We'll be back in just a few minutes with a whole lot more Soundbites. Stay tuned.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District, Jazz 90.1.
On Instagram at WGMC Jazz 901.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And it's 6 minutes after the hour. We are Soundbites. I have to say, this is the first time I've opened the calendar in this
Chromebook.
In this Chromebook, and I got a message that said, "Allow calendar to access your calendar."
maybe.
Okay.
That amused me. I'm sorry, but that amused me.
No, that's.
The program is asking to see your calendar.
The program is asking itself whether you want to go into it.
Yeah, exactly. So that was amusing to me, I have to say. That was amusing. At any rate, welcome back. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And did I do this already?
Yeah, we already did.
Okay. Well,
You were amused with your calendar.
I'm amused. You got a light going there.
Just
purple. Are we off the air?
No.
The red light is we're off the air.
The red light is off the air. I don't know what that light means.
Purple alert. That means we're going to enter Spore Drive. No, that's black alert.
That's sorry, a black alert. That's
purple alert was when the Voyager was going to land on the planet.
No, that's for the swing radio, and I can't do anything about that one.
Ah, okay. So here's an interesting thing. It will soon become possible to export all of your Facebook pictures and videos directly to Google Photos without having to download them first.
Ooh.
The move is part of a wider initiative to facilitate the sharing of personal media between service providers, but also it makes it much easier to pack your memories up and leave altogether. Leave Facebook, that is. In a recent announcement, Facebook revealed a new data transfer tool that enables users to transfer their uploaded photos and videos into other services, of which Google Photos is the first. It has long been possible to download your personal information from Facebook to a local computer, but that solution leaves the user with the task of sorting through that downloaded content and uploading it manually, perhaps even one image at a time, to any other service they may wish to use. Facebook's new tool simplifies and automates the procedure by securely encrypting and transferring your data directly from Facebook to Google Photos in just a few clicks. The new facility arrives thanks to the Data Transfer Project, a platform set up in 2018 to create an easy way for users to move their data between online services wherever they want. Contributors to the project currently include Apple, Facebook, Google, Microsoft, and Twitter. The system works by accessing a service using its existing software interface, or API, before converting the data into a common intermediate format, which can then be converted again as necessary for the delivery to another service via a different API. The project uses open source code to encourage development, collaboration, and openness. Facebook is currently testing the tool, rolling it out first to users in Ireland, with the rest of the world set to follow by the middle of 2020. Once it has been made available in your area, you'll be able to access it alongside existing options in the Your Facebook Information section of your Facebook account. In practice, the usefulness of the feature will depend on the quality of metadata associated with the transferred media. Being able to store a backup of your photos on another service is undoubtedly useful, but much of their value remains in the associated tags, likes, and comments, which may or may not survive the transfer, along with important data such as captured date and location. Of course, it also probably means sharing your Google login information with Facebook, which I will never do. Maybe you should set up a separate account to move those pictures. Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415.
Yeah, we were talking about a service that I read about that allows you to collect all your wish lists from a bunch of other websites and put it into one master wish list.
Yeah.
That sounds pretty cool. Until you realize you have to give it your credentials to every other website you have a wish list on.
Yeah, I don't trust Facebook for anything. I always feel kind of grumpy when I, you know, I see people's birthdays and stuff on Facebook, and they've got some sort of a donation thing going on.
Yeah,
I always donate, but not through Facebook, because Facebook is not getting my financial information. Under no set of circumstances is that ever happening. No. In a word, heck no. So
but how do you really feel about it?
Yeah, really. Don't hold back, please.
You know, who doesn't love Facebook?
Me.
I go there.
I have gotten to where, you know, I don't post anything. I mean, if I go there maybe twice a week just to check on things, that's a lot.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I'm just tired of people complaining and are doing those stupid contests, you know, their elf things and all this other stuff. And it's like, you know what? Build a bridge, get over it.
Here's the problem with those things. They are just ways to get information about you.
You think?
Well, yeah, because look. Yeah, what's your stripper name? Well, it's the street you used to live on and the name of your first dog. Oh, guess what? Those are also security questions.
Mm-hmm.
Percy Fluffy.
Percy Fluffy.
Percy
you
Fluffy.
Had a dog named Percy?
Yeah.
Yeah, we got a drink
stripper
man,
name of Fluffy? And the stripper name of Fluffy?
You got a drink named Phil? We had a cat. Had a cat, not a dog.
Yeah. It's ridiculous. Those things are mostly to get information about you, and most of them are coming from the same set of Russian trolls. But people fall for them left, right, and center, and do them all day long. You know, good for you, I guess, but not for me. Thanks.
One thing I did have, a couple of folks asking me, and they're saying, which is very true. Right now with the Christmas season coming up, I mean, we're less than 3 weeks away. As far as computer items.
Oh, I was going to talk about that. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, just different items, that you might want to consider, for the folks at home. There's no, big, boxes and everything else that nowadays, I got to have this big computer to do this and do that. Like we've been saying for the past week or so, and I told them, we talked about this just last week. The big boxes and all that are slowly going away. Your Chromebook, $134 Chromebook. You got a full computer there that you can do anything and everything you want. It doesn't get viruses. It doesn't get spyware. You don't have to buy a stupid OS. You can still do all your documents and everything else on it. Because they were asking me about that. Well, I got this old... I told them about a Chromebook. I said, it's a perfect solution. And, you don't have all those settings. They go, but yeah, what if I want to listen to music? I said, you can do that. You can download the apps. Any of the apps that you have on your phone. Because he was, loves to Pandora or one of those others. I forget which one he said. I said, you can still play that.
They all work. Remember, nowadays Chromebooks have Android apps. So if there is an app that exists,
you can put it on there.
You can put it on there.
And a lot of those music streaming services started out as a website anyway. So you can go to the Pandora website or the Spotify website.
Right. Well, I'll tell you what. One thing I have in my little Chromebook here is a 128 gig SD card, micro SD card. 128 gig micro SD card. And in terms of music... I have about 6 gigabytes of downloaded music on this thing. That's an awful lot of hours of music.
Yeah, you can go for a couple days and, not hear the same tunes.
Right. And I also have, hold on, let me get the, I have video as well. And I have 6 gigs. A video,
and probably and you still probably have still over 100 gig of usable space.
And I still because I've also got let's see, how many pictures do I have on this thing?
Oh.
I've got 7 gigs of pictures, and so that leaves me plus I've got some other audio, some Android files, some Linux files. A couple of databases that I carry around.
But you still have more space than you're going to use for a while.
I still have 96.4 gigabytes available on that device, on that micro SD card. So, yeah, you don't run out of space.
No.
In general, and it doesn't, in this one, it doesn't even stick out.
Yeah.
Just about a half a millimeter.
Enough so you can grab it and pull it the rest of the way.
Well, you just got to push it out.
Right.
Yeah, it's got like a little trigger on it that'll push it back out.
Right. And the same with my 8-gig machine. And when you've got 128 gigs worth of music, movies, files, programs, everything else, 8 gig of RAM, and a quad-core processor, I'm not sure what you think you're missing. There are programs that will let you edit audio. There are programs that will let you edit video. Whether you do that online, or you use an Android app and do it right on your machine.
Mm-hmm.
There's all kinds of this sort of stuff that you can do. And don't forget, on these newer Chromebooks, you can also run Linux apps. So if you're an Audacity fan, whether you're on Windows or the Mac or Linux, there is a Linux version of Audacity that runs in a Chromebook. So you can record and edit audio all day long. Same with video. There's all kinds of programs that do that. So something like a Chromebook, again, if you want a high-end machine, if you're really going to do audio and video, you already know you're spending a lot of money.
Right.
You don't do that on a cheap machine. You don't do it fast on a cheap machine anyway.
So going back to what we were talking about, though, folks, you know, as far as the big ticket items and all that, there's no one big ticket item that, you know, is out there and the hottest thing that you got to have as far as processor or speed or anything else. There's just a lot of stuff out there because of folks using more and more devices to suit their lives, whether it's a tablet or a laptop. Or, you know, even a desktop. It's a combination now. It's not just one item. You know, you've got your phone that you're carrying around with you probably most of the time. And, you might have a laptop that you grab here to go to class or do this or do that or take with you to a meeting that, you know, makes it handier than, you know, I got to take all these notes. You know, now you can take this laptop or even a tablet to your meeting, take notes, and it can even record stuff for you. Because there's so many different apps that you can sit there and turn on to have it record it.
And that's one other thing that you can do. You can buy a gift card. I don't think they call them iTunes gift cards anymore. Do they still?
They do. There's iTunes gift cards. Well, they've separated them. The electronic gift cards work for iTunes, Apple Music, App Store, so you can buy an App Store gift card that will work on iTunes. Your electronic stores all use one class of card. And then there's the Apple gift cards that only work in the physical store.
Right.
So be careful which one you buy.
We're talking about apps. So if you get the electronic one that lets somebody, and you can give that as a stocking stuffer for $10 as a gift, whatever. The same thing with Google Play. Google Play also has gift certificates. So you can give somebody $10 worth of apps on Google Play. If you want to spend a little bit more money, every single human being on the planet needs another thumb drive. There's your $15.
Another thing that's becoming very popular is audiobooks. Some folks have a long commute into work or that, you know, a gift card for audiobooks so they can listen to a book. You know, or that going in and out of work, or, you know, if they want to just relax during their lunch, they can sit there and play it on a tablet. And that, you know, it's another item that can, you know, add a lot of hours of enjoyment to it. And the variety of authors that are out there nowadays.
Right. Or if people still read, I don't know who does, but still read, you can buy them a regular ebook. Also, I think the single best gift you can give someone for Christmas this year?
Raspberry Pi. Four.
No. No.
With the next on screen.
Nope. A gift subscription to the Ask Nick newsletter.
Well, that's...
It's a mere $25 a year, and they get 50 weeks of my Q&A column, which I'm still doing every week, just not... in a newspaper. Now it's a newsletter that people subscribe to. Now tell me that's not the best gift.
That you should be advertising that more.
I should be, and I should be. But there's lots and lots of simple gifts for the geek in your life. Even if you're the geek in your life, you can give yourself a lot of things like that. And I think that that doing that is probably the easiest way at this point to definitely make sure that you've got stuff going on.
ThinkGeek got bought by GameStop, and they've ruined it.
Who, the what now?
ThinkGeek.
Yeah.
Wonderful. They got bought.
Love ThinkGeek.
Got bought by GameStop, and it's been ruined. It sells video games.
Oh, how sad.
Most of the stuff that ThinkGeek was known for, they don't sell anymore. The little toys... They still do some of the plushes and some of the collectible stuff, but the Cube Warfare, a lot of the stuff they used to sell are gone.
Well, this stinketh.
What did I miss? What did I miss? I had to answer the door.
Yeah, apparently ThinkGeek got bought out by GameStop. and most of the good stuff that they sold, they don't do anymore.
Hmm.
Yeah, a lot of it now is game related. Well, that's too bad. That's too dang bad. Oh, well. It is what it is. It's the mark of the 21st century, I guess.
They're probably not going to do their April Fool's. Maybe they will. April Fool's. ThinkGeek had the best April Fool's pranks.
Yeah, they really did.
And some of them were so good that they actually went
products.
And made them. Yeah.
One, my favorite one was the little electronic beeper thing that you could hide somewhere. Yeah. And it would, every once in a while, just make an electronic noise. I did that to Dave Ballard, who worked for me, and drove him crazier than he was.
Yeah.
It was very nice.
One thing I think that
and
is...
Tom, and also Tom.
Great. That is catching on, which you're already ahead of the game on, is the 3D printers.
Oh, yeah.
More and more folks are starting to get into... Yep. I see people saying, oh, I'll just make something, you know, and they... use a 3D printer now to whether it's making a case, you know, I had one
for
friend
Raspberry Pi?
Was doing a Raspberry Pi and he wanted to be able to put a 7-inch screen. So somebody came up with a design. And he, oh yeah, well we can do this. And he put it, so it's a 45-degree angle, holds a 7-inch screen, Raspberry Pi clips on the back with the node on it and away he goes.
There's a site called Yegi, YEGGI.com, and it's essentially a search engine for 3D printable files.
Okay.
So you download the file, print it on your 3D printer. Through that, I found not only the thing you were talking about, but also one that includes space for a 1,000 watt-hour battery.
Wow.
Oh,
so you can 1,000 watt-hour battery. So you can actually now carry the thing around,
wow.
Make it a tablet.
Oh, wow.
Essentially. And it uses the same kind of batteries your planes use.
Yeah.
The big 1,000 watt-hour ones.
Yeah.
And so you charge it the same way. You take it home, you plug it into a USB port,
there
and
you
you're
go.
On your way.
Yeah.
And it, and you've made a tablet for $35 for the Pi, another $50 for the thing. You print the case, or you can buy them. There are places that will print them and send them to you.
Mm-hmm.
And another, what are they, $50 for the...
Well, that's the other thing. A lot, some folks are turning that, turning that into a business.
Yes.
You know, sitting there offering to make different things online through these 3D printers. Because it's so much fun. And like you said, the files are already there. And once you design the file, boom, you're good to go. You can crank out as many as you want and give them different colors even.
Yep. Some people are selling those files. Some people are giving them away for free. So you can usually find what you want cheaply or free.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of places sell them for $2.
Yeah.
Right. And it depends. The quality of what you print depends on the quality of the printer you buy. Mine is a cheap printer, so it's not going to print out super high detail. But for the kind of things that I've been printing, like that case,
yeah,
it's fine. It's fine for that.
Yeah, it's what
I printed out a little pill holder for myself. That I should hold it up to the camera. Hold on a second while I. This makes great radio. There we are. It's a little pill holder.
Oh.
That unscrews and holds my. No, I'm good. It holds
I'm
my,
not. Give me some. Yeah,
no, they're dairy tablets. And it screws back up again. And I have to say, the screw mechanism is very, very smooth and very clean. And, you know, my printer was $130. I apparently spent $130 on everything I buy. I mean, now that I say that. It took an hour and change to print.
Mm-hmm.
This one's in white. I made one for a friend in green and another one for a friend in red, made it longer because he takes vitamin pills that are longer. So, yeah, it's easy enough to make these things. It's easy enough to
have fun and look what's a lot of folks designing them and everything else.
Well, and you can design your own, whether you go as high end as, you know, there are a bunch of very high end design programs that will save STL files, which are the kind you need, or you can go online and use a program like Tinkercad, which essentially is shapes that you can manipulate to make some very sophisticated stuff.
Okay.
That's how I made this.
Mm-hmm.
And it's easy and cheap comparatively. You know, you can spend thousands, you can spend hundreds of thousands on a 3D printer.
Any hobby you get into, it depends on how deep you want to get into it. Let's face it.
But if you're not looking to print big things, and I know a guy who prints cosplay pieces.
Yeah.
So he's got a printer that's enormous. So you can print a whole helmet in one go. That's not a cheap printer.
Yeah, no.
But I have another friend who does very much the same thing on a printer that's exactly like mine. Mm-hmm. He prints them in pieces and sands them and glues them up and makes stuff. So
I know a few guys that do rocket parts or fin cans.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, hey.
Yeah, or whole little rockets.
Yeah.
Like I say, that's becoming another sideline for computers and playing around with stuff that, you know, you can sit there and do and have fun with.
Yeah, some very cool stuff. There's some pretty nice files out on Yagi. So check it out and you can see some pretty cool things. But yeah, think about inexpensive gifts for your friends. Things like thumb drives, a subscription to Ask Nick.
A USB charging cable. Everyone always needs more of those.
More of those. Get a decent brand. Spend more than $5 on it.
A long one. Yeah, get like a 2 meter one.
Well, what my daughter gave me last year was a set of them. Yeah. There's a short one and a couple of middle ones and a long one. And I can't tell you how useful those have been.
Yeah.
In the various places that I am. So yeah, there's a whole series of these things that you can get for people. If you're a geek and you've got a non-geek friend, give them the gift of time. Give them a session of the Security Tango, which costs nobody anything except a little bit of your time. Head on over and enjoy that. So we're going to take a quick break back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 29 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's right. It's Soundbites, right here on the Truly Great, and truly grateful to you as we remain member-supported. Jazz 90.1. We'll see you on the other side.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 35 minutes after the hour, yes, we have Scouty Clies.
And Scouty Clies.
Scouty Clies. And we also have Gerald from Webster, New York on the line. What's up, Gerald?
Hi, guys. I was listening to you describe some of the, laptops and computers for the holiday season. I'm in the market to replace an HP laptop that I've had for about close to 8 years now. It's still running Windows 7, but I don't use it all that much. However, I'm going on vacation for a while in the winter, and I want to get a new laptop and get it up to date. I was just wondering some suggestions you might make. I'd heard you talking about the Chromebook. I never used a Chromebook or an Apple, but I wonder if those two would be something I should maybe look into nowadays. I don't use it a lot. I just emails and internet, some financial work on the computer, but no games or anything like that.
Okay. In terms of a Chromebook, if your email is web-based, you'll certainly have no trouble. So if you're using Yahoo Mail or Google Gmail or, you know, whatever, that you can get online and do all of that, and it's it's easy. In terms of doing documents, of course, the easiest thing to do is Google Docs. You can put all of your documents there. If you convert them to Google's format, when you upload them, there's a box that says to do that automatically for everything you upload. If you convert them to Google's format, they don't even take up any of your space.
I see.
So
I'm using email now with Roadrunner, and I don't know if that would be a conflict with the Chromebook or not, or something more difficult. I don't know.
No, they do have a web-based interface for Roadrunner email. Pretty much any email has a web interface, mm-hmm. too.
Yeah.
But something like Google and Yahoo were designed primarily for the web.
Right. So you can do that. As far as your financial stuff, what program are you using?
Oh, I'm using Quicken, I think, for that type of thing.
I think there's an online Quicken now, isn't there?
I know it syncs online. Yeah, I'm pretty sure you can run it online, too.
I'm not sure about that anymore. Because I know that some of it they backed off on.
Well, the desktop version you buy a subscription to, so it will sync to your online accounts. But you don't have to pay the subscription every year. If you stop paying the subscription, it just stops syncing. The program doesn't quit working.
Right.
But they're another one of the companies that are trying to move to web-based subscriptions for everything.
Right, yeah. Quicken Online trend. is gone. But there are other programs, Personal Capital, Mint, which is Intuit. Mint.com, you can do that, and that's
which is
problem.
I think they're owned by Intuit.
Yeah, they are. Intuit Mint. So MINT, Mint.com, which is the same company that owns Quicken. So duh.
Yeah, that's easy.
Actually, no. Intuit doesn't own Quicken anymore. They split off.
Right, which did own Quicken, right?
Yeah.
But so you can do that as well. Here's how you know if you can use a Chromebook. If you have, if you run Google Chrome on your laptop and run all of your stuff through the browser for a week or two, and it's doable, then you can easily use a Chromebook.
Okay.
And waiting till January when most of the stuff goes on sale is probably not a bad idea anyway.
Oh, I never thought of that. That's a good suggestion, I guess.
Yeah, so there were sales at Black Friday, and then prices are back up for a while, and then there's more sales at Christmas, and then the after-Christmas sales start.
Because they want to lower their inventory. Yeah.
Right. And then what's next? The Valentine's Day sales, and then the President's Day sale.
Yeah, right.
And around.
There's always a sale coming up.
Yeah, what is it? If it's always on sale, then it's never on sale.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But yeah, so the trick for a Chromebook is to use the Chrome browser, Google Chrome browser, and see how much of your stuff you can do. Do your writing on Google Docs? Do your email through the web? Give a shot at mint.com and see how that works. And if all of those things work, then you can move to a Chromebook very, very, very easily.
I've had some friends associates that use the Apple, and they swear by it. I just wonder if that would be an alternative.
It's always an alternative. Apples are good products.
Yeah, we often get kind of a bad rap in the Apple world because Apples tend to be more expensive. But Apple doesn't make a cheap computer. No, they're lying. They don't make a cheap computer. They make a good computer. So it's also tends to last a lot longer than Windows machines do. We often see people keeping their Macs for 10 years or more. And so you're going to pay a little bit more for a Mac. One of the things we do kind of see a comparison with is with the Chromebook, a little more comparison to the iPad. As being an internet-based appliance, it runs most of the apps you need it to run. You can get a physical keyboard if you do need to type a lot. And at the high end, the iPads go for $2,000. So it's
yeah,
but they start at $300, so that's a nice deal too. And a lot of people like that touchscreen option. We often call them the living room computer because it's easy on the couch with a tablet in your lap. Sometimes even better than a traditional laptop that you have to balance on your lap a little harder.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Okay. One quick question, too, with my email.
I'm getting, when I get an email from someone, sometimes I'll get two emails. One will be the straight, and the second one will be in, like, quotes. I don't know what's causing that, like quotation marks.
It's the same email?
It's the same email, yes. Just a repeat of the original one, but the second one is in, like, quotation marks. And I don't understand how that happens.
I've never...
Yeah, no.
Have you... Is this from anybody or only specific people on certain...
Well, it's not every email, but certain ones, different ones, when it comes through, has that second one with it and the quotation marks. And I can't really say it's just one person or place that it comes from. It's just kind of different places.
Is it an actual second email, or is the email repeated inside the same email?
I believe it's a second email, yes.
Okay. You do need to do a little more detective work here and pay attention to who it's coming from. If it's coming from one specific person, then that's their problem. If it's coming from all the people on one particular server, that's also their problem. What is the email program you use now?
It's the Roadrunner, Time Warner, I forget what it is right now. I've used it for so long.
Are you using the web interface, or are you using a program like Thunderbird?
No, I'm using the web interface.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
It's Live Mail.
Right, but you're doing it through the web.
Windows Live app?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
That app is gone now, so...
Yeah. Windows Live app, you're done with that anyway, but yeah. The Windows... Okay. So what you might want to do is... Now, see, if it was in the same email, that makes sense. But if it's in two separate emails, it's got to be...
It comes right with the original email. It doesn't come later. When the first original email comes, it'll be in there, and then it'll follow it right almost the same time you look on the screen with the same email address, wherever it is, and the quotation marks with it. So I'm just wondering why it's duplicated like that.
Well, again, you need to do some detective work. But if it's coming in a separate email, then it is likely that it's coming from another person, from the other end. If it were duplicated in the same email, then it's something that you might be having to fix at your end. But if it do some checking. Pay attention, maybe write stuff down, see if it's always from one specific person or everybody on one specific server, like at gmail.com, that sort of thing, and that'll give us a clue as to where to look next.
All right, I'll try that. Thank you very much.
Yep, good luck. Yep, unfortunately, sometimes the answer is there's some research that needs to be done. One of the things that... If it had been in the same email,
yeah,
then it might be that he's got his email set to not show HTML code. And so he might get a message twice. One is all the text, and the second one is all of the codes. Some email programs do that. I haven't used Live Mail in decades, so I don't know any more about that one. But that sort of thing happens. But I don't know what it would be beyond that. And we have an announcement.
A
very important announcement.
As of January, I don't know why I'm stuck into January. But December, we're starting up the German show again, folks. So, if a number of folks were missing it and wondering, when you're going to be bringing that back. Well, the station is glad to announce that the German show is returning. I believe it's the 20.
It's coming back on the 21st.
Here it is. Took me a minute to get to the page. But yes, the German show, which a lot of folks, loved when George was running it, and asking for it to come back. Well, they're proud to say that it's going to be coming back on December 21st.
Now, that's not the show itself. That's a Christmas special.
Right. But it will be on from 2 to 3. So Saturday, December 21st, it's a special Christmas one, sort of to kick off the German show coming back. So, you know, stay tuned and be on right after us starting the 21st of this coming month.
No, only on the 21st.
Oh, I thought it was...
No. It's the Christmas special is the 21st.
Oh.
And when it actually starts its full-time run, stay tuned and we'll let you know.
Oh, you read further into it than I did.
I did.
Thank you, sir.
My pleasure. On TLDR. The 21st, it's the Chris what?
TLDR.
Yeah, TLDR.
Which took me forever to figure out what that meant.
Too long, didn't read. Yeah. But it will air on December 21st from 2 to 3, and there will be an announcement coming as to when the regular weekly run will begin, at what time and how long and all of that stuff. But for those of you who've been... German show fans, that's, I can only assume, everyone everywhere, we will let you know when. Stay tuned to Jazz 90.1 and they'll absolutely let you know how and when and where and how and when and who and where and how and where and when and who and how. And we're going to go back to the phones. Our next caller is Dennis from Rochester, New York. What's up, Dennis?
Yeah, I called on the iPhone. I found I had my phone auto locking too quick, but I got a Chromebook question.
Yeah.
I bought my son a Chromebook for Christmas, which he's not listening to the show, so I know he's not going to hear this.
Okay.
Didn't you do a couple of ebooks like tutorials for?
Yes, I did. Those are also excellent gifts. They're only 99 cents a piece. They're available through Amazon. They're Amazon eBooks, and you can very easily just look me up as the author. And there were three of them, of which two would be something that you might find useful. They're Chromebooks for Seniors, A Guru's Guide, probably not the one you want. The one you probably want is I Just Bought a Chromebook, Help.
Yes, that sounds like... Sounds like a good thing.
Yeah, and if your son is interested in doing a lot of word processing, I did write one called Google Docs Word Processing in the Cloud.
And that sounds good, too, because he does.
Yeah, there you go. And those are all available through Amazon. Just search for Nick Francesco as an author, and they'll come up. I think you can actually get them from the... Soundbites. You can get links to them on the Soundbites.
Gee, that would be handy if we had links.
Yes.
I think
I don't know
there.
How to spell your last name.
F-R. F as in Frank. R-A-N-C-E-S-C-O.
Wait a minute, man. You lost me on that one.
That's okay. If you go to soundbites.org, that's bites with a Y, you'll see in the middle column... In red, the poll is back. Under there is a link to my ebooks.
Great. Okay.
That's the easiest way to get to them.
So if I purchase the ebook, can he just use it by signing in or something, or how does that work?
Well, you can do it since it goes through Amazon. It works like any Amazon thing. You can buy it for another person on Amazon.
As a gift.
Ah. Okay. Oh, that's great. All right. That's what I need. Thank you.
There you go. Enjoy.
Okay.
Have fun. I've been in the process of writing another book for a long time on ransomware, and I should probably just...
It keeps changing so fast.
Well, that's the problem. With all the three books that I've written, I've updated a number of times, and I should go back and update them again. But it's just this stuff changes so quickly and so often... That it's
hard to keep up.
Yeah, it's hard to keep up.
It seems like the latest targets these days are municipalities.
Yeah,
we heard over the summer about a lot of cities in Florida and Georgia were hit with ransomware through school districts, through the town themselves, and some of the detective work that was done turned out to be a centralized customer service company that had like a contract for the school district. And so that company got infected and 300 schools were hit by it. But a lot of municipalities now have ransomware insurance. And so, you know, these, you know, $200,000, $300,000, $500,000 ransomwares, we only have to pay $10,000, and the insurance company pays the rest.
Right. Then your premiums go up.
Your premiums go up.
Well,
and then,
one of the problems,
and then it gives the bad guys incentive to do more because they're getting paid.
One of the problems that I have with the book I'm writing is that how do you fix ransomware? You wipe out your machine and use a backup.
Yeah.
I mean, it really is that simple.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to pay anybody anything.
Yeah.
Reformat your machine.
Oh, backups is something I think we might have mentioned once or twice.
I don't know. We'd have to go
back. In the past 30 years?
We might have, but I don't remember.
I'm just taking a, you know, wild guess.
One thing, I send out my newsletter every week, and at the bottom of the newsletter I have, say, wouldn't this be a good time to back up?
Yeah.
But yeah, you should be backing up all the time. And I'm not sure I want to write a ransomware book that's mostly fluff, and the only important part is back up every single day.
Yeah.
And several cities, was it Baltimore got hit, Atlanta got hit, the city government got hit, and the cost, it was millions of dollars to recover from the ransomware. In a couple of cases, the ransom was less than that, but you don't want to give the bad guy's incentive to ransom anybody else.
Yeah.
And even if you pay the ransom, you don't know if you're going to get your stuff back.
Right, right, right.
That's why it's just so much easier and so cheap.
Restore from backup.
To back up. Hello, you could have it do it at night.
Right.
When, you know,
just leave your computer on overnight. And if you've got local backup, you keep that separate from your main machine. Maybe you have a network-attached storage. It's just a hard drive stuck on the network somewhere. You can do something like pCloud, where you back up right to the cloud. You can back up to Google Docs. You can back up to iCloud. You can back up to OneDrive, if they still call it that.
Yeah.
All of those things, you can back up. There's a million places you can back up.
I want to safely say we've been preaching backup for at least 2 decades.
Yes.
Two decades.
No, three. We just celebrated our 30th anniversary.
Yeah, but no, I mean,
believe the first thing we ever said on our show was backup.
Yeah, but we've been preaching it even more so
at least
the last 2 decades that, you know, if this stuff is important, because back then when we first started, you know, viruses and all that were pretty prevalent in that, but it's more critical now with the bigger storages and everything else that we've seen in the past 2 decades. As far as people's information.
Well, and nothing breaks my heart more than I've lost all the pictures of my grandchildren.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Oh, man.
We had a customer come in this morning. He's getting a new computer, and so he wanted to know how he got his data on it. And he said, well, you restore from your backup. You have a backup, right? He says, yeah, it does it automatically, right? Yeah, it will. Let's look and see. Backup, never.
Yeah.
I thought it did it automatically. Well, yeah, but you have to tell it to start the first time. On to something.
Duh.
So do you have a backup drive? What's that? It's something you back up onto. You need somewhere to put your backup files. Oh, I thought it did it automatically. It will when you tell it where to go.
Right, and have somewhere for it to go.
Yeah.
All right, that music tells me you've wasted 2 hours of your life with this nonsense. We're done. We're done for this week. And no, there's no German show following us this week, but on the 21st, there will be a one-hour German Christmas special, and then stay tuned to Jazz 90.1 to find out when the German show returns. We're done for another week. I want to thank Dave Enright and Steve Ray. I'm Nick Francesco. It's 55 minutes after the hour. You've been listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. It's Soundbites, right here on the truly great and truly grateful to you that we are member-supported Jazz 90.1. Thanks to all of you. We'll see you all in just 166 hours.